seated. Ms. Crossett, did I pronounce your name correctly?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. Would you like, as you know, each side has 15 minutes to argue.
Yes.
Would you like to reserve a portion of that for your
Yes,
rebuttal?
Your Honor. 3 minutes, please.
All right. You have it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the Court. I'm Jessica Crossett, Deputy Public Defender for the City of Newport News, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Howard Odell Harrod III. I assume that the court is familiar with the facts in this case, so unless there are any questions, I won't waste time reiterating those.
That's fine.
I would like to clarify one misstatement on the Commonwealth's brief just regarding the order of events in this case. It is on page 17. The brief indicates that Officer Walczak called for backup before having contact with Mr. Harrod. The order of events is correctly stated in the statement of facts. I think that was just an oversight, but it is clear from the record that he had contact with Mr. Harrod first, then returned to his vehicle, immediately called for backup, and immediately called for a narcotics canine dog to respond. And that, of course, is part of the issue in relation to assignment of error number two. But I'd like to start with the first assignment of error, which is that there was no reasonable, articulable suspicion to support the traffic stop. That is the basis of this entire police counter that leads to Mr. Harrod being convicted of possession with intent to distribute marijuana. The intention on behalf of the Commonwealth is that he was stopped for making an improper stop on a highway in violation of Virginia Code 462888. And I am sure that the court has reviewed the police body camera video that was part of the record in this case. And I think that
I have.
It was shown and viewed by, I think, in chambers again, but it was viewed by a trial circuit court judge as well. And I think that the video itself really adds to Officer Walczak's testimony about the nature of the stop and what exactly his observations were prior to stopping Mr. Harrod. And what we've got here is a case where Mr. Harrod came to a stop for 3 seconds at a corner, at an intersection, where he did not have a stop sign. The only other car around is Officer Walczak driving a marked police car. It is very clear from the video, and he did admit in cross-examination at the trial level, that he stopped and then he rolled forward. It is clear in the video that he rolls forward into the marked crosswalk area, which is also a violation of Virginia law. But when he did that, Mr. Harrod stops, and he did not in any way stop in a manner that impeded Officer Walczak or rendered the roadway dangerous. And that is what 462888 prohibits. That's
Counsel, let me stop you, and I hate to interrupt you. Part of what we're talking about is the basis for the stop and not whether there would be sufficient evidence for the conviction. Would that be fair to say that it sort of gets
pushed
down into two parts?
Yes.
When you're looking at whether there is probable cause for the stop, what we have, or reasonable articulable suspicion for stop, is you have the officer describing the fact that his movements were in fact impeded, that he actually did have to stop longer. So why wouldn't that be a reason for the officer to stop under 462.2888?
Your Honor, that's a great point. And one thing that really bothers me about this case is that the Commonwealth at trial and here on appeal says, well, Officer Walczak was impeded because he couldn't go through the intersection, or he said he couldn't turn left or proceed straight. Well, he has a stop sign. that's what you have to do at a stop sign, is stop and yield to oncoming traffic. And the fact that Mr. Harrod stopped his vehicle in response to Officer Walczak's rolling stop, he stopped for 3 seconds. He was not in the middle of the road. He was right at the corner of the intersection. He looked at Officer Walczak, make sure he's not coming out into the road, and then he turned. And I don't think that there is anything about this case that suggests even that there's even reasonable suspicion to stop someone for impeding a roadway. And certainly we're not talking about whether the evidence would be sufficient to prove beyond a reasonable doubt a conviction of that. He was never charged with that.
But I guess that's what I'm asking. Let me follow up in part, aren't you? Because what you're essentially saying is that there's not enough evidence to establish that there was, in fact, the impediment. And my question to you is a little bit more specific, and that's in terms of, wouldn't the officer have the right at that point to stop and investigate based upon the action? Not whether the court would actually have enough evidence to convict under 46.2888, but whether there would be sufficient reason for the stop.
Your Honor, my argument is that there is not sufficient reason for the stop based on what Officer Walczak observed. My argument is that Mr. Harrod was driving in a very normal, cautious manner. And to say that, you know, someone pausing at an intersection before turning for 3 seconds when the only other car around is a marked police officer, and I do think that's important because police officers, you know, there may be an emergency. They may be flying through the intersection. Who knows? I don't think that, you know, saying that you can stop someone, that you can seize someone, detain someone for that, for stopping and looking in the opposite direction for 3 seconds before you turn, I think that the implications of that are very broad. And as I argued on brief, you know, you get into a situation, how could that be distinguished then from, you know, say you're the first car at a traffic light, a red light, and it turns green? Well, I think all of us who follow regular routes on a commute know the lights where people run the red lights. So you pause for an additional couple of seconds to make sure everybody going the other way is done running the red light. But you have a green light. There's nothing telling you to stop. So should the police officers then be allowed to stop that person because they're impeding the car behind them by not proceeding immediately upon the light turning green? I think that the issue here is, you know, the Commonwealth points out that 46.2888 has an exception. You can stop, of course, to avoid a collision or in an emergency. And I think if you're looking at that exception, especially in light of the facts here, Mr. Harrod very well could have thought he was avoiding a collision, because you've got a situation with this police officer that has stopped and then rolls forward. And from Mr. Harrod's perspective, he very well could be stopping because he thinks the police officer is going to proceed through the intersection. And so in his mindset, maybe he is avoiding a collision. Certainly we're all, when we learn to drive, trained to yield to emergency vehicles of any type. And I don't think that almost instinctual response when you see an emergency vehicle of stopping or slowing down or getting out of their way, I don't think that is something that should justify a seizure or a detention upon somebody. And so it is our position that the detention that did result was in violation of Mr. Harrod's constitutional rights.
Can I ask you, counsel, the trial judge, Judge Fisher, cited to Lightfoot.
Yes.
And said that the statute, which of course simply says the first sentence that seems to be the one most relevant here, no person shall stop a vehicle in such manner as to impede or render dangerous the use of the highway by others, then except in certain situations like an emergency, as you mentioned. But Judge Fisher talks about Lightfoot and the exception that really, as I have read Lightfoot and Selleck, it seems to be stated more in Selleck, both of which are unpublished opinions of this
yes.
court. so the fact that there are only the two vehicles there, there's no one behind him, it would appear that he's not impeding any traffic unless he's impeding the officer, who doesn't have his lights on, I understand. If Selleck were to control what we did here, how would you distinguish Selleck from this situation?
Well, Your Honor, to back up just a little bit, Judge Fisher at the trial level he really didn't address the stop once he made a decision. He just said, well, Lightfoot takes care of that, and that was it. And
he made the factual finding it was 3 seconds.
Right, exactly.
And then said, Lightfoot takes care of it. Then he spent a long time talking about whether this there was an extension of the stop that was improper.
Yes, in my view of it, it is quite the opposite. I think that the bigger issue and really the stronger argument for Mr. Harrod is the stop itself rather than the prolonged detention. But in looking at Lightfoot and Selleck, first, as Your Honor mentioned, of course they are unpublished, not binding, persuasive. Lightfoot specifically was addressed, it was brought up by the Commonwealth throughout the pendency of this matter, and it was the only authority that the Commonwealth could point to trying to support this stop. But what is distinguishable is the facts of that case. And the court goes to great lengths to say, you know, we are basing this on whether or not they had reasonable suspicion to stop for a violation of 462888, not the other activity. But as I recall, in Lightfoot, the appellant was observed going or peeping into a church window, and then he got into a car. And the difference in that case was that car was stopped right in the middle of the road, and it was stopped for 15 seconds. And that, I believe, was a residential or urban area, they described it. And what we've got here is...
Someone was getting in the car,
yes,
too.
I think it was someone peeped into a church window, then got into the car. And a lot of times we see stops justified on 462-888 in situations very much like that. Someone stops in the middle of the road to either pick up someone or let someone out of the vehicle. But that's not the case in Mr. Harrod's case. He stopped. I mean, first of all, there's, I think, a distinction to be made between the location and the duration of a stop. The location was not in the middle of the road. It was at an intersection. It was actually at the corner of the intersection. If you've looked at the video, he's not, you know, blocking any street. He stopped right at the crosswalk at the edge of the corner. And he also stopped for 3 seconds. And then he turns right and continues on his way. And I think that's the clear distinction is the location and the duration of the stop.
And I should let you
know,
thank you for answering my question, that you're going into your rebuttal time. You can continue or you can reserve.
I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Forster, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
And I should just tell counsel, it's a little hard to see, I'm told, from the courtroom, but the timer is up here, and so I'll just note that. And I also should ask if counsel has not signed in for these cases this afternoon, if you would be so good to do so. Thank you. You may proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, Stephen Forster, Your Honors, on behalf of the Commonwealth. I want to start by responding to the issue that's been focused on opposing counsel's argument, which is the reasonable suspicion for the stop. And what we have to remember is that we're on appeal, and the standard of review is in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. Several of the arguments put forth by counsel are re-arguing the facts at trial, not necessarily on appeal. And we need to focus on the record, the transcript, and what's there, the evidence that was before the trial court in determining whether or not there was reasonable suspicion for the stop. When we look to the record, we have Officer Walczak's testimony. He stopped at the stop sign, and rolling perhaps slightly, but we're speculating as to, you know, what was, you know, Mr. Harrod thinking inside of the car. We can't speculate, we can't surmise, we can't go down that road. But we have Officer Walczak testifying that he's at the intersection, Mr. Harrod comes down the four-lane divided highway, and he stops. There's no blinkers, there's no four-way signals on, there's nothing. He is now just stopped in the middle of the highway. And he testifies, that prevented me from going through the intersection, I believe it was turning left or going straight, And
didn't he back up a little bit from that on cross-examination, saying, well, it didn't keep me from going through the intersection, but I didn't know what he was going to do? I mean, he wasn't so far forward that I couldn't have gone straight or turned left.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe he backed off, but it was in the context of, I didn't know what he was going to do, so to put myself in that situation would have been unsafe. And I believe he used the word unsafe. Mm-hmm. Again, he testified as, if I would have gone through the intersection, who knows what he would have done. And as we argued on brief, with Mr. Harrod stopped in the middle of the highway, you know, had had Officer Walczak gone straight, would have been in a T-bone accident. Perhaps had he gone left and Mr. Harrod went straight, they would have had a rear-end accident. That's why it rendered the use of the highway dangerous. But getting back to the statute of 46.2888, it specifically reads, no person shall stop a vehicle in such a manner as to impede or render the highway dangerous. Now, when I looked up the code section, there's no specific definition in 46.2-100 as to what impede means. So we looked at the ordinary definition of the word, and it means delay or prevent someone or something by obstructing them. So by the very definition of the word impede, by Mr. Harrod stopping in the highway, he prevented Officer Walczak from continuing through the intersection in whatever way he was capable of doing with respect to what Mr. Harrod was doing on the highway.
Well, counsel, I think respectfully that appellant's counsel's point in reference to the statute is that it couldn't be impeding because of the length of time, understanding that there's no specific time limit noted in the section. Factually speaking, though, would that 3 seconds qualify for impeding?
I would tell you, Your Honor, that I found no case that discusses any duration. Again, we can look at the Lightfoot case and say 15 seconds, but there's nothing in the statute that says it has to be impeded for a certain duration. So we have to look at, again, what's before the court, and it's officer says, I was prevented from moving forward. Prevent is, by definition, what impede means, and so that right there creates that. And again, going back to your question earlier, we're at the reasonable suspicion stage. We're at reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. You know, we're not at the probable cause for arrest. It simply says, is there a reason for me to pull this in, or Mr. Harrod over? At that juncture, there is. You know, again.
Can I ask you on that, though, counsel? You've got a situation here where he stops for 3 seconds. He's not even blocking the intersection. Lots of people, when they're in a neighborhood, they don't know whether they should turn right or left or keep forward, are going to stop for 3 seconds or longer to try to see the street sign or figure out what they're going to do. If he were a little old man as opposed to a young man and he was stopping to see whether he should turn or not, would that give the police reasonable, articulable suspicion to pull him over?
I would say yes, and I would also distinguish that slightly from the facts of this case, in that we're not talking a residential neighborhood where perhaps it's, you know, it's common to drive very slow. We're talking a four-lane divided highway. Now, I would say that's very different in the context of we have four lanes, and there's no stoplight, there's no perceived stop sign, there's no testimony. I thought I saw something that would made me believe I would have, you know,
so
should
this
have stopped.
Is a four-lane divided highway?
That's I believe, is
the
what...
The video sure doesn't seem to indicate that.
Okay.
I mean, it looks like a residential neighborhood because in the video, toward the end, this van stops and says, what's going on? And the policeman, I think the officer here, says, drive on, ma'am. And she says, oh, that's my cousin. You've stopped there. I just was worried about it. And he said, I understand, ma'am, drive on. It, the whole thing seems like a very not busy residential neighborhood as opposed to a four-lane divided highway. And that just sort of leads into, you know, the rest of my question. If you're trying to decide where you're going and you stop, which I've certainly done many times myself for at least 3 seconds or longer to try to figure whether I should turn left. And if I see a police car, a marked police car sitting there, I might stop to let that car see what he was going to do, as I did on the way down here today when a state policeman without his lights on pulled right in front of me on 64 and I slowed down to let him do that. And then went well under the speed limit until I realized it was okay for me to pass him. So, you know, I'm trying to get my mind around here. In Lightfoot, it was 15 seconds. and somebody's getting in the car. They're waiting for this person who's looking in a church window and holding a brick and decides to get in the car instead of doing something else at the church, apparently, gets in the car. In Selleck, the officer goes around the block and comes all the way back around and says, that took me at least 15 to 20 seconds, and there's someone talking to him while he's sitting there in the road. Here, there's no one talking to him or getting in or out of the car, as we see all the time in, around the Richmond Circuit Courthouse. You simply have someone stopping for 3 seconds, and he decides to turn right. Where's the reasonable articulable suspicion there?
I would start by saying we've learned we shouldn't stop at intersections for 3 seconds. But to move to your question, the statute doesn't provide a duration. And I know that we do look to other cases for the context in which the criminal conduct is imposed in the sentence and so on and so forth. Here we do have some duration. And there is a stop, and he does stop at an intersection. Regardless of the time, he does not have any traffic control device warranting a stop at that juncture. And under the statute, again, the term impede, even when we define it, doesn't have any durational component. It doesn't say it needs to, impede for X amount of time. It doesn't say impede X amount of vehicles. To your question earlier, no one behind him. We don't have any of that. What we have is just to impede and render danger. So I would say at that juncture, we're still at that point, the officer would still be justified and have a reasonable suspicion for stopping for impeding, perhaps for a limited duration, and not as long as Lightfoot or Selleck. But
so he's impeding the officer, essentially is your argument here.
Yes, the Commonwealth's position is based on the record, again, the black and white transcript that we have and the testimony of Officer Walczak, is I'm at the stop sign, I'm trying to proceed through the stop sign or the intersection, and because Harrod stops on the highway, it prevents me from moving and or navigating the highway in any way.
Because I don't know what he's going to do next.
Exactly. And I think that that's the other component. We have impede and we also have dangerous, because if people are just driving around stopping at every point in which there's an intersection with no traffic control device, again, you can't predict what someone's going to do behind the wheel. And so the only thing you can do, the only responsible thing
is... He may be wondering what the officer in this marked car might decide to do, and he doesn't want to... could be deferring to the officer, as I did today, too.
He very well could have been, but what I would argue to the court and submit is that we don't have any evidence to say what he was thinking, what he was doing, or why he did what he did. What we have is the officer's testimony is that the staff was looking at the code section, says impede the highway, I'm at the intersection, and for that reason, I could not get through the intersection because of it. And again, there is no durational component in the statute, and if there were to be one that said 15 seconds, I would argue that that's for the legislature to do.
But the legislature has rather clear language here. No person shall stop a vehicle in such manner as to impede or render dangerous the use of the highway by others. And it's hard to see where this is rendering it dangerous. Maybe impeding the officer, but not anybody else. We have these two Court of Appeals cases that are memo opinions that say, well, you don't have to show actual impeding. But the statute, with due respect to some of my colleagues, the statute doesn't say that. And we have to read the text of the statute as the General Assembly wrote it, as long as we're not bound by precedent that forces us to do it another way. So I guess I come back to, if he's trying to defer to the officer to some degree in a marked car and he stops to decide what he should do next, aren't we going to have reasonable articulable suspicion for lots of people, including lots of little old ladies or little old gentlemen who are trying to decide whether to turn or not?
And as unfortunate as that may be, I would agree that if there is a point in which somebody stops and it impedes an officer in this case, or anybody for that matter, under the statute.
So for 1 second, then,
I would say, again, if that... nothing in the statute or any case law the Commonwealth has found says specifically we have to have a stop for X amount of time. And what I would go back to as well is it's impede or render dangerous. So it is disjunctive in that you can have one or the other. It doesn't have to be I was impeded and it was also dangerous. And again, if we look to just the plain meaning of the statute and the words used in the statute, impede just means to prevent from going through.
And I hate to keep pestering you with questions here, but clearly the trial judge found that it was a 3-second stop. I counted two, but the trial judge is the fact finder, and he said three, so we'll go with three. What else did the trial judge actually make a factual finding here? He didn't really talk too long about the stop. He talked for a long time about whether it was extended impermissibly or not. But he says Lightfoot deals with that issue.
And I would agree with the court. It was extremely brief. It said the case dealt with it. I found that he stopped for 3 seconds, and that was sufficient to have reasonable suspicion for the stop. And
he didn't make a factual finding about impeding or dangerousness or anything like that, did he?
No, I do not. There's nothing in the record that I am aware of right now that would say he's made a finding that it rendered it dangerous or that it impeded. It was Lightfoot takes care of this, and for that reason, I find that he stopped for 3 seconds. And I believe it would have been, again, if the court had stated it more clearly, the 3-second duration was what causes the impediment, which is what established the reasonable suspicion for the stop. I will continue arguing the first assignment of error unless the court would like me to move to the second, or I'm...
I've asked you a lot of questions, and proceed with your argument as you wish to.
Okay. I'll move to assignment of error very briefly. Again, I cited to the Hill case out of the Fourth Circuit. I think it answers essentially every argument from opposing counsel, arguing that Officer Walczak had reasonable articulable suspicion for the stop. He walks up to the vehicle. He asks for identification. He walks back. He calls for backup. His transcript's not necessarily 100% clear as to when he calls for the canine, but he does call for the canine. But all of these events happen while he's still pursuing the traffic stop. Again, he goes up the first time. He goes back to write the summons. He goes through the system. He learns your license revoked. He then immediately investigates that. Again, still the primary point of the stop, investigating the traffic infraction. He comes back. He testified repeatedly. I believe it's at... anyway, testifies repeatedly that while he's still drafting the summonses, Officer Hunt and Officer Jesse come there. He asks them to go and try to get consent for a search. As the court in Hill noted, an unrelated investigation is fine so long as it doesn't prolong the stop. He testifies again, I'm still in the process of writing the traffic summonses while they're investigating. The canine unit never arrives, so it is not as though the stop was prolonged while they were waiting for a canine to arrive. And
counsel, not to interrupt, but there are parts of the video that seem like there's a long period of time to write what would seemingly be a rather simple traffic ticket. Do you want to? I mean, obviously we have what we have in terms of the video, but there appear to be times when he's doing other things rather than just looking at VSEN or DMV or.
And while I would say that with the record and what we have, he has testified that was all encompassed within the traffic stop and that it was all in furtherance of the initial stop. And for that, I would just say that although there might have been moments where that he was doing other things, it was all within the context of investigating the initial stop, then investigating the revoked license, and then, again, he was moving forward with calling for backup, discussing with the other officers that he would like them to try to get consent, waiting for the canine. And I would just submit to the court that all of the actions taken by counsel, or taken by Officer Walczak, were in furtherance of the traffic stop.
Can I ask you, I knew your time has expired, but I'd like to ask on the canine. Because he appears, it's a little hard to understand what Officer Walczak says there, but he seems to say, to one of his fellow officers, I don't smell anything. Let's ask for the canine. What should we attribute to that as far as if he doesn't smell anything? Does that mean maybe I just can't detect it, but a dog can?
Well, and again, what I would go back to from the Commonwealth's perspective is we got to look at the record of what he testified to. And in the record, he definitively says, I smelled marijuana. I smelled marijuana emanating from the car when I was first served. It was the first or second time. It's a little unclear. He says that he smelled it. And that is why the Commonwealth's other position is that even if they were waiting for a canine, there would have been another reasonable articulable suspicion for to continue to stop for that. And I believe the reference is Joint Appendix 89 and 90. 89. He said it's not marijuana. And I'll pull the quote.
Right.
Yeah, I believe I have it here. On page 89, it says, "And you said to them that you had talked to him and then smelled the marijuana, correct?" Correct. And so I would simply, as a Commonwealth, would defer to the record and say it's clear in the record that you smelled marijuana, and that would have justified any prolonged stop, even if there, not that there was one, but had he waited for a canine. Thank you very much.
Of course, the canines never came, but the canine never came. All right, thank you. Appreciate it, Mr. Forster. Ms. Crossett, you have your rebuttal time.
Yes. Your Honors, I'd like to, there are many things, but I want to touch briefly on the odor of marijuana thing because I think that that's important. The video, of course, can be considered by the panel. It is part of the record. It was considered by the trial court, and it is the record on appeal. It's interesting, in court, he testified, Officer Walczak testified that he smelled marijuana. He does, as Judge Beals aptly pointed out in the video, when backup arrives, he says, "I don't smell anything, so I called for a canine." I also have trouble believing that if you've smelled marijuana, you're going to call for a canine, or you're going to ask your backup officers to try to get consent. All of these things say that this stop is entirely pretextual. And no, Mr. Harrod was not a little old lady. He is a young black male in what the officer described as a high crime area. It is residential, clearly, on the video. The officer immediately, after he has initial contact with Harrod, returns to his vehicle. The very first thing he does is call for backup, which I think is unreasonable given the nature of the stop in the middle of the afternoon. But the second thing that he does is...
But we have to give officers some discretion in deciding whether to call for backup.
Yes, right. And certainly he can lawfully do that. But the very second thing that he does is call for a narcotics canine. He said he's not sure whether he began running things through DMV simultaneously or after he made those calls. Those are the very first things he does.
But the trial judge makes a factual finding that it each only required several seconds to do, right?
And that's true, Your Honor. And, you know, the Rodriguez case has rejected all of this de minimis delay.
For a minute, I don't mean to interrupt you, but sure. Can you go back to the officer's testimony on the first, related to the first assignment of error, that he felt impeded in what he could do?
And Judge, I don't think that, you know, when you're looking at reasonable, articulable suspicion, it is an objective standard. It is not subjective to Officer Walczak felt that he was impeded. He is impeded because there is a big red stop sign in front of him. That's what he has to do if he's following the law, is he has to stop at a stop sign and wait for traffic on the cross street to go through or turn. He's simply being required to do what he's already required to do by the traffic control device in front of him. So, you know, the Commonwealth contends that, well, because this officer was impeded or he had to wait for 3 seconds at a stop sign, that gives rise to reasonable, articulable, objective suspicion. And it is our position that it absolutely does not. And I see I'm out of time.
I gave Mr. Forster some extra time because of all my questions. But if you would like to wrap up briefly.
Your Honors, it is our position, of course, that this stop was completely unlawful from the outset, that Mr. Harrod was seized in violation of his constitutional rights, and we are asking the court to reverse and dismiss his conviction. Thank you.
All right. And I guess, well, I need to ask you on that, too, because this was a written plea agreement. So if we were to agree with you, wouldn't we need to reverse and remand?
It was a conditional guilty plea pursuant to a plea agreement. That is a good point. I believe that he would then be entitled to withdraw his guilty plea.
So that would require reverse and remand, actually, rather than a reverse and dismissal, if we were to agree with you.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. All right. Thank you, Ms. Crossett. We'll greet counsel, and then the next case on the docket is Jane Elizabeth Reed versus Angus W. Reed.